Okay, so this is kind of continuing that broad brush. Let's think about leadership a bit. Now, I'm somewhat embarrassed to say that it used to be the case that the implicit and on occasions the explicit criteria for selection for church planting leadership in commission was the assumed ability to be able to captain the school first 15. Happily, we've grown up since then, and we've realised the error of our ways. He may have been the exception. It was certainly uncharacteristic, but I think the leadership style and ability of people like Graham Miller convinced us that there are different ways to lead people effectively. And I don't think you'll mind me saying that there is no way that Graham would have made the first 15, let alone captain it. Now, what I want us to do today is to think about leadership, in particular leadership styles, and our need to flex our leadership styles. Whether it is one or other of these leadership models, the Goleman's leadership styles, we've thought about that, coercive, authoritative, affiliative, democratic, pace-setting, coaching. Whether it's that as kind of a summary of the way in which we lead, or whether it's something like Kubitschek and Cochrane's five voices, it is obvious, isn't it, that there are many different leadership styles. Different people lead differently, and that's okay. Now, in thinking those things through, obviously a lot of those styles overlap. Every single one of them will have their strengths and their weaknesses. For example, if you have the model here, Coleman's leadership styles, if you have a sort of affiliative, the upside is you care and people know you care. People come first. Oh, that's lovely. Trouble is, you never get anything done. That's an exaggeration, but there are upsides and downsides to each and every leadership style. Coercive is brilliant. You get lots done. Do what I tell you. Trouble is, you end up with 31-8 doing a particular, writing a report on you, which everyone then gets to read. Now, some leaders, of course, are able to employ a variety of styles. But the truth is, most of us have a go-to style. There's one that sits most happily and most comfortably with us. You may be conscious of what your leadership style is. You may not be. Others are, and you need to work out what it is. Now, there are two common mistakes in this area of leadership. The first one is this: to assume that a certain leadership style is the only or the best leadership style. And honestly, I think this is what we've done at times and we continue to do. We assume that a style is the style, it's the best style. And guess what? It happens to be my style. It's like, oh, really? But a moment's thought all leaders to recognize that, different courses require different horses. Mistake number two is to assume that every situation can be handled with a single default style. I love this expression, and it's actually come to me pretty late, but the expression, for a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Have you come across that before? Oh, it's brilliant. I love it. I love it. And it's true. But one size does not fit all. A directive style works really well in a crisis with a whole load of people who don't know what to do. But not every situation needs to be a crisis. And the danger is, if we think our directive style is the way to go, the truth is we make everything a crisis. So that, guess what? Our leadership style fits the situation that we're in. And it's been interesting just to think about that and work out how often that happens. But if we handle each and every situation as though it's a crisis, then competent people who know what to do, creative people who actually want to have some space to think, are just going to end up feeling disengaged, frustrated, and alienated. And so what I need to, what I want us to think about is flexing our leadership style. Now, those of us that are parents or who have been parented, we're familiar with that. We know full well that particularly as kids get older and into the teenage years, you need more clubs in your bag. You know, when the kids are preschooling, you can say, you know, Thomas, stop it. No, don't do that. You can't do that with a 17-year-old on each and every occasion. We know that we have to flex our style. And if we've been on the receiving end of parenting, we know that we don't just want one style. We want mum or dad to be different depending on what's going on. So what I want us to think about is different styles, and in particular, when those things might be useful. So I want us to think about not so much about different styles, but what different styles are needed at different stages that people go through. Now, a lot of what we're doing, particularly with the first years, or the pre-launch guys, is thinking about the need to build teams and involve others to increase our ministry capacity and make the best use of the human resources that God has entrusted to us. And so we'll begin to give stuff away because we can't do everything. Otherwise, we limit the size of our gospel ministry engine. And so we'll give stuff away and we'll begin to observe there is a pattern in people's development. And it has been suggested by, and as it won't surprise you to learn, I'm climbing on the shoulders of Craig Hamilton. He has suggested that there are four stages in people learning a skill or an ability. He says they start out as enthusiastic beginners, but they become disillusioned learners. They then progress to become capable but cautious before developing into a self-starting flourisher. Now, whether this personal journey of professional development is invariably true, I'll leave for you to decide. But like most things that come out of kind of the management observation, there's something in it. There really is something in this. But whether this is invariably true or not, it does illustrate the need for us to select a different club from our ministry bag, depending on the circumstances and situations that the people that we lead find themselves in. Let me take us through what he suggests. Each of the stages is listed down the left-hand side. They'll make a comment about their level of competence, their level of enthusiasm, and then I'll make a comment about the leadership style at each. Stage one, then, is the enthusiastic beginner. And people at this stage, they're new to a role, they're new to the responsibility. They've asked to do something. They're thrilled to have been asked. They're really good to go. They are high on enthusiasm, but they are low on competence. In one sense, they are zealous but clueless. Now, it is entirely possible that they may have never been involved in leading anything at all, ever. Or they could be really experienced leaders, but actually they find themselves in a new role or they're responsible for a new task they've never done before. But the bottom line is this, they're beginners. Now, what do they need at this point? They need a style of leadership that is directive. They need clear instructions about what they need to do, how they need to do it, and by when they need to do it. They don't lack for motivation, but they just need pointing in the right direction. So they need clarity, they need information. Now, that kind of highly directive style works really well. And the truth is, we will probably need to keep our eye on them, a little bit hovering, a little bit sort of helicopter parenting, certainly close managing as they make progress in that beginning stage. Secondly, disillusioned learners. People at this stage have been doing the role for a while and they're still learning what needs to be done. And that is just a little bit frustrating and demoralizing. They're still low on competence, but now because of the steepness of the learning curve, they're now just a little bit despondent. They're low on enthusiasm. Whereas initially they were totally up for it. Now they're a bit, I can't believe I'm still here. I thought I'd be better at this by now. So they know they're not doing well. They know they've still got a fair way to go. The truth is, this is the low point. It's the hardest stage to navigate because, of course, the massive temptation for a disillusioned learner, of course, is to say, that's it, I'm done, I quit, I'm out of here. And therefore, the leadership style that's needed is one of coaching. Now, obviously, because they're still low on competence, they still need direction. They're still learning the ropes. They're still climbing up the learning curve, even though they're slightly lagging behind where they need to be. But because they're lagging behind where they need to be, they need encouragement. Because, of course, they think it shouldn't be like this. But it's just the reality. They're struggling for motivation. They need our encouragement. Now, they don't need the kind of the helicopter parenting hovering over them in quite the same way as was necessary in stage one. But we still need to be familiar enough with what they're doing and how they're doing it and how well it's going, so that whatever encouragement we provide is both contentful and meaningful. In other words, a bland, you're doing a great job. You're doing a great job. How do you know? Well, yeah, because it's the right thing to say. Yeah, that doesn't cut the ice, does it? But if you're able to say, look, if you're thinking about, online tech, look, I've been following our social media feeds and I love the stuff you're tweeting at the moment. The references you're making to the Gospel Coalition stuff on evangelism is really helpful. And they're thinking, okay, great. They've paid attention, they know what's going on, and they're able to encourage me. That kind of encouragement is contentful and meaningful, rather than, hey, you're doing a great job. That just doesn't cut it at all. At this stage, what people need is feedback, constructive. You're doing really well there. Look, I just wonder whether this could be something you need to do. They need reassurance. Look, it's always like this. It's a steep learning curve. We climb at different speeds. That's fine. And encouragement. Keep going. This is brilliant. You're doing way better than I could do. Stage three, capable but cautious. People at this stage, they've got all the skills, they've got all the knowledge, they know how to get the job done, but they are just cautious. They're kind of deliberate about each stage that they take. They don't need to be, but they are. The skills aren't natural yet. They're not innate. It still has a kind of by numbers feel to it. You know, that kind of painting, paint by numbers, where you get the blue and it goes everything that's numbered 9 and you paint it. And then, red, okay, that's 8, right, 8, 8. Rather than a kind of, hey, here is a picture, here are my paints, right, let's just do it. Dun, 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 dun. There it's done, brilliant. There's still a kind of colour by numbers feel to do this. But the truth is they can really get the job done. They can handle the task on their own, but they're not yet convinced that that's the case. And therefore, they're somewhat reluctant to take on responsibility. But the leadership style that works really well there is one of supporting, by which I mean fundamentally, listening to them, providing reassurance, giving them confidence. They don't need the directive approach any longer. They just need space to get on with the job. But what they'll need probably is lots of time to talk through what they're doing so that they can kind of bring you up to speed. You need to listen. And then it means you can provide reassurance. Okay, I've heard what you've said. That does sound like the right thing. Brilliant, crack on. Now it's hard for us, because we just want them to, we're aware that they can do it. Just get on with it, for goodness sake. And we need to exercise patience at that point and provide them with the reassurance and confidence that they need. They're not given confidence by us just saying, look, you can do it, just crack on. That process of just, let me talk through it, let me hear what you think about it. And it enables us to say, look, you've identified all the obstacles. You've done the right, it sounds to me like you've done the right thing. You're making the right calls, keep going. At this stage, we're learning to let go. And then fourthly and finally, the self-starting flourisher. The truth is people at this stage can perform the task from start to finish almost without thinking. The entire skill set is just second nature for them. The truth is if you tell them, this is what needs to be done, this is what it needs to be done by, they will just go away and achieve it. They'll troubleshoot it and they'll deal with anything that prevents, that is an obstacle autonomously. They don't need you to be involved. And they're likely to be able to fulfill what's asked of them with a high degree of excellence. The danger for them, of course, is they might be bored because they're so good at it and they need a new challenge. But the style we need there is one of delegation. I'll say a little bit more about delegation in due course. But fundamentally, we need to get out of the way. Let go of the reins, give them permission to crack on with things. So they need space and freedom to get on with what they're good at. However, I do think we need to be careful about how delegation is working. I mean, there's delegation and there's delegation, isn't it? If you're not sure, Google 6 levels of delegation and you'll work out there's I can delegate a task by saying, do as I say, or I can delegate a task as take care of it for me. Those are two ends of a spectrum. Just do what I say is I'm not the one doing it, you do it. Whereas take care of it for me is I don't even need to know what needs to happen, who's done it, it's just get it out of my way. So the temptation for guys like this is to leave them to get on with it. But the truth is we still need to be involved. They'll need encouragement from us. They'll need appreciation. Now look, why are we doing this? It's obvious, isn't it? When we're asking people to do stuff and we're giving away responsibility to our team leaders in the congregation, people are going to make progress through this stage. They'll be enthusiastic beginners, zealous but clueless. They'll be disillusioned learners. They're so frustrated they're not better at this. They'll then be capable but cautious, you know, just a little bit. And then they'll be, as good, if not better than you at doing stuff. We will have a natural default style. We could be the kind of directive person. We could be the kind of coaching. We could be the kind of supportive or the delegating. We'll have a style. We just need to recognize that we cannot treat people at different stages the same way. If we're going to serve people as their leader, we need to ask ourselves, where are they at and what do they need from me? And then give it to them. In other words, find the right club from your ministry bag to hit the golf ball further down the fairway or onto the green. Let me stop there. Queries, comments, observations, or whatever.
I'd be interested to know what this graph looked like if you add in perception of your own competence as well as actual competence. As in, you can end up with people who their perception of their competence is very high when in fact your perception of, of their competence is low. And, you know, and the other way, I mean, you kind of get it with the capable but cautious, right? Their enthusiasm is low because their competence is... because their perception of their competence is that they are bad when in fact they're good.
What's this one? Have you looked at the learning cycle? Have you seen that before?
Oh, is that the conscious incompetence? Yes. Unconscious incompetence, conscious incompetence. Yeah.
So the unconsciously incompetent are the hardest to deal with. The consciously incompetent are actually the easiest to deal with. And actually the unconsciously competent are also frustrating as well. Because they simply don't know how competent they are. Those unconsciously incompetent, they have no idea just how bad they are at something. That's really hard. They're the hardest to give feedback to, aren't they?
This might show my lack of leadership, but how do you, bringing people in and trying to sort of give them a leg up and starting them at a, you know, not from scratch, but trying to start them at, give them a running start in terms of the tasks that you've given them to do. I just wondered how this plays into that because, yeah, they are still a beginner, but perhaps what you're starting them off doing is not something that's coming, it's not a new task. It's something that has already been up and running. I just wonder whether, I've just found myself kind of leaning towards that here because I'm aware that people have low confidence in being able to do something. They won't put themselves forward for something, and I'm much more kind of leaning towards, okay, let's start up something where I put most of my effort into getting it running for a while, and then they can see it working, and then they know that it's not going to fall apart in terms of you're not actually giving them anything to innovate or to start up themselves, because people here seem to be a little bit, Yeah, the risk averse or low on responsibility. Can you sort of where would that come in?
I would say, first of all, we want to be apprenticing people at everything. So in other words, if we are starting something up afresh, do it with someone else, because they will learn by seeing and learn by doing. So whenever we're thinking about something, whether it's starting a Mums and Toddlers, whether it's starting a Men's Pie Night or whatever, you do it with someone else. You take someone else along with the journey because they'll learn by seeing and by doing. So I think that's really wise. I think there may be wisdom in saying, in one sense, you providing the infrastructure or the superstructure, the structure for what happens. And then in one sense, you're teaching them a way of approaching things, a way of thinking, a way of executing. You then push them into it. You know, you absent yourself and you push them into it. You still need to be involved along the way. But the point will come where you hope they say, Rob, in all honesty, your way of doing it, I don't think is the best. And I've got this as an alternative. Now, at that point, they could be capable, but cautious. I just wonder, it feels a bit awkward. And I think you want to listen carefully, hear their rationale. You know, think actually there's something in that and not be precious about it. And it could be that actually they get to the point where you think you are so much better than this than I am. Just crack on. Understandably, in some contexts, that will be less easy. And it may well be that actually what we're having to deal with is people who are disillusioned learners. I can't do this as well as Rob could do it. And that's where we need that kind of, look, you're not as bad as you think you are. The nature of a learning curve is you've got to go up it. It's going to be difficult. We'll climb at different speeds. The truth is, even if you're doing it badly, you're doing it, to do it badly is better than not doing it at all. And actually, you're not doing it badly. It's that kind of coaching, talk me through it, let me provide you with lots of encouragement. And one or two things, look, I just wonder if you did that, I think that, would that make a massive change? You know, what's the one thing that you think you could do differently that would make a massive change? Okay, why aren't you doing that? Oh, okay, why don't you do it? Yeah, okay, right, brilliant.
That's helpful. I think just in terms of, it's made me think about the failure thing that, you know, some people would, you know, from our kind of tertiary educated, you know, we've had failure. You just get used to sort of realizing that you might fail at things, and you've failed at something, but you pick yourself up and you have confidence to carry on. Whereas I think there might be people with really low self-esteem, whereby even just the smallest failure will put them off it completely. And so I guess that's why I'm
thinking. I think our problem, Rob, is we talk about being tertiary educated, and lots are. The truth is that doesn't necessarily make us any good at anything other than talking about stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And you know,
but it gives a level of confidence.
Times at Balham where I just thought, seriously, guys, we just need people to do stuff. I'm surrounded by people who've got opinions. I actually want, we need people to make something happen, not talk about what needs to happen.
Yeah. You've got committees, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to be truth, that's often Richard's frustration as well. But that's why there are some churches out there across the country. You just look at what people get involved in and their willingness to serve and make things happen and deliver. It's fantastic. You don't want to debate stuff. You're very happy to deliver stuff. It's just terrific. So I think it'll be, once it's, you're trying to work with what you've got in front of you, haven't you?
That's I guess what I mean in terms of, it's not that they won't innovate. It's just they're starting from a position where they haven't been given confidence to do that or encouraged to do that necessarily. And the innovating in itself is sort of quite far on, I think, in terms of the whole confidence thing, rather than necessarily being something they want to do when they first get involved in something.
One unexpected thing of this. I think this is really helpful for us understanding in any time moments of ineffectual leadership or that sense of frustration. So in other words, you know, if to a hammer everything looks like a nail, and if you just treat it the same way, and you know, if you actually need screwing, you know, you're not going to get very far. And it helps manage frustration. I think this helps us say, what do these people need from me here as their leader? And for example, I am time poor. So anything that requires me to listen at length, interact, provide reassurance and give them confidence, I find frustrating because I just want to say, make it happen. But if I know that that's what those people need from me, and it is part of their progression towards being self-starting flourishers, I can sort of see the light at the end of the tunnel and I can manage my expectations. This is going to be a longer conversation than I was expecting, but at least I can manage. I won't get frustrated because it's taking so long. And I think that's helpful because it just means it keeps the unhealthy emotions out of stuff.
Hmm.